Right when our divorce was final, we started dating again. And then we went a whole other year, and then we kind of tried to give it a go again, and it didn't work out because...
God, we're a mess.
I know.
Rolling.
I came here on a golden rocket.
You never listen to me.
Leaving on a magic carpet and now...
Divorce sucks.
It's what you do this time.
We don't like each other.
He doesn't like me. I like him.
I'm Serge.
I'm Monica.
We were married for almost 9 years. We're divorced now.
We live four doors down from each other.
We have three kids.
You're not being very nice to me.
This is our story of divorce and life after divorce. Our ex-life.
Our ex-life.
You want a drink? I want a drink, too.
So, like, if how about we take turns, like, reading a question?
I mean, I guess. We can just wing it.
You had a lot on your Facebook page I guess I didn't see. All right. Christmas is over. Thank God. Right?
Yeah.
Thank the baby Jesus.
December is brutal.
His birthday is done.
And now it's brutally cold. It is like, what, 10 degrees right now?
It's cold. The kids have been throwing up. I feel like I might puke during this podcast. It's just been an exhausting month, you know, all in the name of joy. All in the name of holiday spirit.
You're the one that digs the holiday, man.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm
just trying to live up to your expectations.
I even got this feeling that the kids didn't even like their Christmas gifts this year.
It's the same thing every year. We buy them a shit ton of stuff, and not just us, like grandparents and uncles.
Yeah, I didn't go overboard, but when you pile on the whole family. But
it's too much stuff.
It was. Anyhow, we got through it. Christmas is over. We're plowing into a new year, 2018. We're on the precipice of a completely new era in our lives.
Era.
And so, I don't know. I guess it's an exciting time, even though we feel like you're stumbling across the finish line in a way. I think most people do at the end of a year. Oh, each new year, as cliche as it sounds, holds a glimmer of hope, right? I mean, there's a little bit of possibility that exists with a clean slate of a calendar year rolling our way.
I think 2017 has been a particularly brutal year for everyone. And personally, it was a really awful year. However, it was nice that it was a brutal year for everyone, so I could kind of slide my personal awful year into everyone's intense political malaise.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I mean, as America was being made great again, you were falling apart, as was I.
I was being made great again in the vein of America being made great again, which is nothing's great about any of it.
So, launching into a new year, we decided, let's do a grand finale, year-end, special deluxe edition of our ex-life.
Special deluxe edition?
Yeah, like this one, people have to pay extra to listen to it, and it comes with merchandise.
Pay extra? Meaning like they're paying in the first place?
T-shirts, to sell for this. No, so we decided to do something cool that we were anxious to do and had talked about for a while, which was sort of invite people on social media that are listening to our podcast to chime in and be a part of it by throwing questions at us, you know? And we got way more than I thought we would. And
you said you feel like throwing up because you're sick. Yeah. I feel like throwing up at the notion of answering some of these questions.
You do?
Yes.
Well, the ones that make you feel the most pukey are the ones we have to go to. Do you have some like favorite ones that are?
No, they're all very good questions. Some of them are very personal, and others are just like fun stuff. Like, what's your favorite food?
Well, let me ask you before we start doing this, though. Do you feel overall as if our podcast has been a good thing for you, like mentally, spiritually?
Ooh, spiritually. Yeah. That's a good question that I struggle with. It has been, I think it's been a perfect mix because
Because at least a dozen times we've each said, we're done with the podcast.
We're not doing this anymore.
We can't do this anymore, right? People,
I think basically
people would laugh if they knew how much we use it as leverage.
Every time we go to record a podcast, we're like, no, we're done.
Right.
We're not doing it.
We can't say we're done. I'm done being a parent with you now. You know, that we would if we could.
Well, that's kind of why I think it's a mixed bag, because there are some weeks where I'm like, I don't want to talk to that fucker and I have to go do a podcast with him. But and so it's that forced interaction that's difficult, and I'm like, I don't want to do it anymore. I don't feel like having that conversation with him because so many other emotions are swirling behind the scenes. But on the flip side, the forced interaction has made us kind of keep moving forward and getting over stuff and continuing to do the podcast.
It's actually like a weekly summit meeting in the sense that we wouldn't have otherwise and didn't have otherwise, you know? So it's, I feel like the word forced is probably the wrong one. There's an obligation that we've created with each other, you know, in the name of art or creativity. And I feel, for me, like it's been really good, like really helpful.
Well, I think you've had a better year than me.
I
think that you are in a better place mentally than... Like we talked about, I had a weird year where I sort of slid back into some kind of funk that maybe you were in the first year we got a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's been a little easier for you to plow onward. And for me, it's kind of like I've been in a really dark place for a lot of this year.
A funk fueled by...
Oh.
Beer?
I think it's sort of a coming to terms with that's such a hard question to answer. I think anyone who's listened to the podcast knows I struggled with you getting a girlfriend, whose name is Arlie. Hello, Arlie. And that was difficult for me, and it was nothing personal about Arlie, who is a lovely human being, and we exchanged Christmas emails, Serge, which was nice. So it was just...
Did you exchange presents?
Where's my present, Arlie? What the fuck? What I struggled with was... here's what happened, I think, and I'll try to be quick about this. I think that since we got a divorce, I have dreaded the moment where you would get a girlfriend, and it signified... It wasn't just like this old-fashioned jealousy. It signified a lot of things to me, like maybe the end of... We kind of have a fun, funky friendship. I mean, we fight, and then we're cool, and we talk about books and movies, and we have this weird relationship that I've... You know, if you got a girlfriend, it might feel threatened.
Mm-hmm.
And my relationship with your family... Because a girlfriend has every right to come in and be like, well... I want to spend the holiday with my boyfriend or these kinds of things. And actually, I'm answering some of the questions coming up. So I just worried that my life would be changed in this way that I've always been scared of because I live out here with no family and your family is my family. And none of that has occurred. Arlie has been very cool about all of those things. And so I think...
But on the same token, like, I guess, like, I was worried, or I wasn't worried, but like... I would lose the same thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, I would lose the same thing. Yeah, of course. If I allowed it to go that way, or if we just started to drift. And no one can ever say in life what's going to happen, but that's never been, just so you know, and I think I've told you that, but that's never been something that I considered, like, okay, now I have a girlfriend, I got to, you know, because it's not like we're toning anything down. A friendship is a friendship, and a relationship, a good one, with your ex, the mother of your children or the father of your children, is astronomically valuable.
Sure. All of that is intellectual stuff that you're saying. But when it's happening.
Yeah.
And not only that. And there's some issues that have occurred where, you know, where I think sometimes you don't communicate with me properly, where we'll have understandings about certain things,
mm-hmm.
where we live very close.
Right.
And so we set boundaries about certain things. And
right.
I think that I have felt disrespected by you
right.
a couple times. And I don't know. It got confusing where, you know, things get confusing and weird. And so it's hard to negotiate all of these little twists and turns. And I think that was the bottom line for me, was maybe I started to feel like I was losing this sort of communication that we had, or any sort of respect from you, or, and then, you know, if it's just a hard thing to navigate, and I just went to a really bad place for a while,
mm-hmm.
and I feel like I have, a shift has occurred for me, mm-hmm. and I'm starting to feel a little bit better,
good.
About it, I guess.
Good. I want you to, you know, I expressed that to you the other day.
I know, but I told you that it's within your control in ways where if you communicate with me effectively, and when we have certain agreements about certain things, whether it's co-parenting or just certain boundaries you have to set in regard to living four doors down or whatever the fuck it is, it's like communication and respect is everything.
Right.
If someone, and I think that's the crux of a lot of where shit goes bad in other divorces, where if someone starts seeing a new person, all bets are off unless people are very communicative and very respectful. And that's how I would like to roll. I also, you know, I can, in the same token, honor how weird it must be for Arlie to listen to her boyfriend do a podcast with his ex-wife. And so it all goes both ways, where it has to be this communication that I think sometimes has not been there.
Right. However, I will say this. Like anything else in life, and like anything else in divorce and moving on, a lot of it you do end up learning as you go. And there's some trip-ups.
Right.
There's ways that we look at things a certain time, and then later on we say, maybe I was a little bit off and seeing it that way or behaving that way or whatever. And at the end of the day, we still keep coming back to the proverbial table, you and me, you know, and trying to maintain the exact same thing that we've always wanted to maintain, which is this friendship, this massive bond, you know, that maybe is not necessarily how a lot of people have it in divorce. But it's important to us because we know it's important to our children and because we don't want to lose that.
Well, not even that. It just makes everything easy. If we didn't have a bond.
This is all about making it easy?
No, it makes it a lot easier.
Jesus.
I just mean, when you feel when you have a stressed out, shitty, I hear from so many people, like friends of mine and just strangers who message me about turmoil in their relationship with their ex.
Right.
And shitty behavior.
Right.
And it's draining.
Right.
And it's awful. And you and I know when we're going through a rough patch, it's draining and terrible.
It is.
And so when you can communicate and you do, you can come to the table and be respectful. And if you are feeling bad, say, I feel bad about this. And if the other person listens and understands, it does make it easier in that shit is still really hard, but at least you're not like completely drained and sobbing and it's hard, but you feel like you're a team trying to get through it together.
You've said something over the past year a few times in the midst of a lot of chaos and a lot of drama and a lot of pain and blues. You've said it several times, I can't function. Like I feel even sick to my stomach when you and I aren't okay.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
And the first few times that you said that, it's not that I disbelieved you, but I had trouble placing that as far as how I felt about it, if that makes any sense. And then slowly, the more I thought about that, because it kept coming back to me, and you would repeat it here and there. It wasn't a constant mantra, but it would come. But when, at one point, maybe 2 months ago or whatever, it really did finally hit me that, holy shit, that's exactly how I feel too. That is exactly how I feel too. When we're not good, when we're not okay,
right.
when we're not like in a place where, hey, just simple shit. Like, did you hear this podcast or you need to see this
right.
Netflix show or just talk about the kids and laugh
it
or whatever.
It feels off and shitty.
It feels terrible. And I think, like you're describing, it's almost like a cancer that runs rampant through a lot of divorce situations and that a lot of people have to carry with them and perhaps and quite possibly never get past.
No, they don't, because you don't. It's all about communication and they don't communicate and it gets worse and then like.
But there are times when it can't be better. And I get that. Like, I feel
no,
like.
No, but any shit we've dealt with over this year.
I'm not saying for us, but for other people, there
right.
are times
oh.
when it cannot
no,
be.
No, I agree. I know there are specific people I can think of in my head.
But if it can be,
their spouse,
and you make the effort to maintain that and to keep it being.
Well, it takes two people. And unfortunately, if one person wants it to be cool and the other person's a dick, there's nothing you can do about it.
Right.
You just have to kind of, okay, I'm just going to try to be stoic and stay the course. And hopefully they'll come around eventually. Where I feel very lucky that you and I, even though we have had some terrible arguments and really horrible things, we keep staying the course. And I know that's because of our kids, but it's not just because of our kids. I feel like you and I have a connection and we have this friendship that's really important to us. And I feel it developing now even more that we do have this friendship where we keep coming back to each other because not just the kids, but we're important to each other in that way.
Yeah.
And I think it took a while for you to understand that. I think I got it before you where I would just try to get you to say, hey, you did this thing that's disrespectful to me, and it's not me being a bitch-ass ex-wife telling you this.
Right.
I'm your friend.
Well, early on, too, like in the first couple of years, I may not.
No, I'm talking about this year specifically.
Right.
When we have disagreements, and I'm saying, Serge, that was really disrespectful what you did to me, and you're like, well, you're my ex-wife. You're the one that wanted a divorce.
Right.
And I say to you, and it took me a while to get you to see, like, we're forging this new friendship now. And you can't just, when I try to say to you how I feel about something, you can't be like, fuck off, you're my bitch ex-wife, I don't owe you anything. You have to listen to me.
I never call you that.
I'm paraphrasing the vibe. I'm just saying.
I mean, I never call that to your face. I do say that, but.
I'm just saying we're forging this new thing where when I say to you, hey, this hurt my feelings, you need to try to listen and understand it because I'm your friend,
mm-hmm.
because I'm someone you care about. And kind of get rid of that vibe in your head that's like, oh, it's my stupid ex-wife giving me shit about something again.
No,
you know what
again,
I mean?
Like, you know, man, I oftentimes I feel like I'm 46 years old. I may have the advanced placement of, you know.
A 12-year-old?
Yeah, sometimes, you know. And I'm not saying that in some kind of guy way, like, locker room. Like, it's not that. It's hard to understand and to know and to make all the right moves. No one can do it. No one's perfect.
I know.
No one's perfect. I don't even try to be perfect. I'm never going
to
be perfect.
But that's why you have to come back to ground zero of listening to someone and saying, okay, how do you feel? Why do you feel that way? Let's talk about it. I don't necessarily agree with how you're feeling, but it is how you feel.
But here I am, right? And I'm doing that. And a lot of people don't.
No.
Guys and women. Like, a lot of people.
I have been hugely impressed with your willingness to hear me out. You may the next day forget about it and you have to start over and I have to re-explain why I'm upset about
it. I'm hearing you out now. I mean, you're dominating the fucking podcast.
Oh, my God.
What's your New Year's wish?
You mean like Christmas wish?
Yeah, but not for a present.
That you have a better life.
Oh, thanks, man. I'll take that.
My New Year's wish is to let everybody see my YouTube channel and to get it.
Is to get your own YouTube channel?
No, I know I'm going to get it. Just to let everybody see it. Just no comments. Like,
so no world peace or anything like that. You just want people to watch your YouTube channel.
Oh.
Hey, Charlie.
Eat that chicken.
What's your New Year's wish?
Pee-pee.
Pee-pee?
Yeah.
And what else? What do you wish for the world?
Eat that.
Fair enough.
Okay, what do you want to do? You want to read some questions?
Yes, let's read some of these folks' questions.
Okay,
start
with... these are questions from Instagram and Facebook. You can find us.
All right, I'll just start. I hear
you. Well, I'm in the middle of a thing where I'm saying a thing.
Oh, sorry.
You can find us on Facebook under the handle Our Ex Life. We're on Instagram under Our Ex Life. You can find us on personal pages as well. But I mean,
Yeah.
So start with the first question that we're going to answer here.
All right, from Kristen. She says, I'm wondering if the amount of doubt is the same on each side of the divorce. Does the should we split equal the should we have split? What's the comparison between long-term relief and regret? And is there a way to quickly and always find common ground regarding kids? Okay, so that's like a multi-headed beast of a question
okay,
right
the
there.
But first it's a good question one. Is...
Does the should we split equal the should we have split?
Let me start that because I'm the one that wanted to split. And so you didn't want to split. So that kind of negates that question for you. And I can't remember if I sent you this quote or not, but I saw this quote on the internet and it says, one of the hardest decisions you'll ever face in life is choosing whether to walk away or try harder. And I think a lot of people come to that point in a marriage where they're like, society teaches us to work at something, and you got to keep working, go to therapy, keep working. But what if your personalities are just inherently so different that to stay together, you have to alter a part of your personality to make it work with that person? And what kind of relationship is that where you're constantly sublimating your personality so the other person is okay? I think...
What would you say? Does the should we split equal the should we have split? Or does one outweigh the other? What would you say?
You're not even hearing what I'm saying.
I am.
I'm dropping wisdom bombs and you just completely...
Well, here's what I think. If you don't mind me to interject here, because this you may agree with me and I think you
totally
will.
Totally interjected. I had a whole thing going. But go on, whatever.
Oh, come on, man. It's not like that.
Yeah, it is.
I think we, as two people in a divorce, have spent an awful lot of time pondering this exact question.
Yeah.
And I feel like at this point, the one perhaps wisdom that I've come to is that it doesn't matter. We did what we did, you know? And if we constantly go and look in our minds and say, and ask ourselves, would it have been better? Could it have changed? We'll never know. We'll never know. The winds have blown.
I think that's a cop out. I think I have a fucking direct answer to that question.
Okay, then what is it?
My answer is that I think there is a time when if you got a divorce for, it depends on the reason you got a divorce. In our particular case, I feel like we got a divorce because our personalities are inherently different and it wasn't going to work no matter how many years of therapy we went to. The way that we are and how we handle the world and our levels of anxiety and how we respond to situations are so inherently different that it makes it stressful for us to negotiate life around each other. Does mm-hmm. that make sense? And that is the ultimate reason why I would say that I don't regret it.
Okay. She didn't ask for the reasons, though. She just asked if it equals. Like if one is...
Well, if you're going to say if it's equal or not, you have to answer the why.
Okay.
I think that I split on adrenaline, so I didn't spend a whole lot of time saying, should I do it? It was a long time coming, and then it happened. After the split, I spent years going, should I have? Was that the right move? I don't know how many people know that we dated twice. We got back together twice after our divorce, years apart. Like, we got a divorce in 2014, and right when our divorce was final, we started dating again. And then we went a whole other year, and then we kind of tried to give it a go again. And it didn't work out because...
God, we're a mess.
I know.
That was such a messy
But it's because
time.
We have this love for each other, but we're terrible in a marital environment.
Right.
And so when you have this...
And it was also very... It's very scary. You know, to all of a sudden, with three children,
right.
to say, you know...
But that's not why I would give it a go again. I gave it a go because I have this intense love for you. And it took me a long time to realize that you can really love someone a lot. But they're not for you in a marriage environment.
Right, right.
And so I really love you a lot.
Right.
And that's beautiful because we share kids together and we're co-parents. But we're fucking terrible in a marital environment. And so do I regret it now? No. But it's taken me a long time to get to that point where I realize you can really love someone, but they're not supposed to be your marriage partner.
Right. And I agree with your answer as... You know, even though it took 9 hours to get there.
Oh, my God. All right. I'll read the next question. Courtney, killing it with good questions on Facebook. This kind of actually, we kind of just answered this, but she says, I've noticed many people commenting, just get back together. Why can't you make it work? Sometimes it seems like when you're amicable and maintain a friendship or a healthy co-parenting relationship, people can't recognize that there are very significant reasons that led to you separating in the first place. It happens to me and my ex, and he has a partner and a baby now. It's nuts and kind of annoying. How do you address those comments, or don't you? And like I said, it's kind of where what I just said. Like, people think because we can do a podcast together, or just because we're nice to each other,
right.
Why aren't you guys married? Well, right. You know, being nice to each other for 2 hours is way different than maintaining the business of a marriage.
Yeah, Courtney, I think those kind of comments, you just let them slide off your back.
They're
There's
stupid.
No point. You know, people don't understand. There is no way in hell that Monica and I could be together. I mean, we can sit here
okay,
and maybe make you laugh.
Okay, you don't need to be
laugh,
so vociferous.
But I'm saying the truth is, like, it is not, even if we go to see Santa or whatever, like, if we pull off 2 hours or something together with the kids, it's a beautiful thing. It's a good thing. But there's also that chance. Now, I think we're getting better at it.
Right.
Right? But we're getting better at it because we've given ourselves the opportunity to get good at it
right.
in a couple hours at a time, as opposed to, hey, this is forever,
well,
me and you, you
here's
know?
Here's a truth nugget. I hate the word nugget. Here's a truth nugget for you.
It sounds so gross.
I know. You and I can laugh and be funny and cool because we're not married.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I just said.
No, it's a whole other thing. You said
it differently. I drop a truth nugget and then you come over and take my truth nugget like a squirrel, like a chipmunk.
If we had to get done with this podcast and then argue about who was going to make dinner and what was for dinner and shit, we would not be laughing and be fun. It would be different, right?
Yeah. I mean, listen, our marriage was like a lot of marriages. It was good for a while. Did we work really, really hard in the end? No, I think we ran out of steam, you know? But we knew each other for like 7 hours before we got fucking married. You
but
know?
That's, who cares about that? We were married
but
for
I'm
9 years.
Like, we probably would have known if we stayed together for a year. So you often said, even in the beginning, that like, you know, you weren't even sure that you wanted to be married to me, even when we were just married. So again, everyone's situation is different and all, but when it comes to all this, you guys should be back
but
together or whatever.
It's different now because you and I now, didn't I say this to you the other day where I love you now? I love you more now than when we were married.
That's because I'm helping you to construct a podcast empire.
That has nothing to do with this. No, I just...
No, I know. It's a genuine thing, and I feel very much the same way, you know? And I never did.
I don't know if we were still married that I would have been able to step back from you, and you've grown so much since we married, and you're this, like, lovely person who's working hard and all of these nice things, and maybe I wouldn't have realized that if we were still married. I wouldn't have. We would still be, like, bitching about our marital bullshit.
I feel like we're both making great strides. You drive me insane. I drive you insane.
Right.
There is so much about each other that... we often sound like broken records, you know, the conversations that we have and rehashing things
oh,
that make
God.
Us crazy about one another. But it is what it is. Yeah, I would just say if someone says that about you and your ex, no matter who you are, and you feel like that's a ridiculous comment, just don't even address it. It's not even worth it.
I know. I wish people would stop leaving that comment on – I get that comment once a week on Facebook.
People don't.
You should just be
people
together.
Don't know what to say to divorce
right.
people. It's like, you know, especially
no.
if they're married or they're – you know what I mean? It's
– All right, so what are you going to read? Elizabeth.
Yeah, here we go. Okay. Elizabeth says, it sounds like it's really painful to continue to co-parent, and I sometimes wonder if this is worse, as bad as it was being married. In short, is being divorced just as hard as being married?
It's harder.
You think? I don't think so.
I think I say that because I'm working harder at having a successful divorce
right.
than I did work at being married. Which sounds weird, but
right.
like you said, I think I eventually came around while married. I recognized we just, our personalities inherently suck together at being married. But now that we are divorced and I can go home and take a breather, I want it to be a really good divorce. And like I said, we have developed this new relationship since the divorce. And I want it to be good and I want everything to be cool. So I do work harder at it.
There are many hard, fast elements of divorce, too, that have nothing to do with our particular coexistence and what was or what is never to be. A lot of what comes down is, you know, finances. You know, single parenting is very, very fucking difficult.
Right.
There's a lot of that stuff. Does that make it harder? Yeah, I would say in those particular lights, life, when you're one parent with even just one child, but we're one with three and they're all young, that element of not having someone there to step in, you know, and just a dinner time routine or a bedtime routine where someone's there to help. I mean, that sounds so disposable in typical conversation with someone. But anyone that knows the realities of that can tell you that it is incredibly dynamic. And incredibly, incredibly hard because just, you know, if you're doing the dishes and someone else is helping the kids get in their pajamas, that's two people, you right. know? But if when you're doing
just,
all that all the
just
time,
10 minutes to tap out and yeah, go to the bathroom.
You can't do it.
You can't do it.
You can't do it.
When you have little kids. So, yeah, it's that's a tough one to answer, but I think I don't know.
I don't think it's that, you know, she says, is it really painful to continue to co-parent? I don't think it's as painful as it would have been had we not, you know, I don't think.
Going completely alone would be more painful. If we didn't have a good communication, you mean?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think, you know. And yeah. So anyway.
So that speaks to maintaining a positive co-parenting relationship.
The Lucy Anderson asks, I've always wanted to know when the break between the two of you started to happen. And was there a moment for either of you when you realized this is it, we're over?
Ooh, the Subway sandwich story.
Right. That's so stupid.
It really is, but it was a defining thing for me.
For you.
And you don't even remember it. You remember it totally differently.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the Subway sandwich
story. Which is very, I think, you know, metaphorical.
I was 7 or 8 months pregnant with Charlie, and I was craving a Subway sandwich. And stuff was rocky and back and forth and whatever, but I was craving a Subway sandwich, and some Doritos, and so Serge went to buy me a Subway sandwich and some Doritos, and he came home, and I walked into the kitchen, and I said, where's my Doritos? Because I couldn't find the Doritos. I said, where's my Doritos? And he looked at me, and he said, I fucking hate your guts.
No, that's not how it happened.
Yes, it is!
No, it's not. You
and I said,
I got you Doritos, and you were like, I wanted Cool Ranch or something like that, and I was like, you got to be kidding. But I had also gotten you, because you were pregnant, I had gotten you the celebrity magazines that you really like. I picked those up.
I don't like those
Which
anymore.
I always got you. I always used to buy those for you. No matter where I was, I would come home at least 1,000 times over the years to make sure you had those. But there was a moment, right? And whether the moment is remembered the same way or not, there was a moment in time when you knew.
I was like, I can't do this anymore.
Right. And therefore, it would have been anything. It didn't matter what it was going to be. I think that came on during the pregnancy. It seemed like I was...
No, it happened our whole...
Before?
Tons of people are asking about our house fire. After we had the house fire and we
went... Oh, there's tons of stressful things. Yeah,
no, not stressful. I'm saying, remember, I wanted to separate right after the house fire. Right. There were other moments where...
You wanted to many times...
Separate.
You used to throw out there, like, I want you to get your own apartment for a while. And that's just not who I am. Like, I couldn't even... I would just dismiss it as utter bullshit, you know? Maybe that might have played a role if I had done that, but I don't know. I feel like, you know, get an apartment. Like, that was just...
I don't know. It was me trying to figure out a way to maintain our marriage, but get some space and some distance to try right. to... I don't know what it was. Anyway, you know, this ties into the other question somebody asked about Charlie. Like, why did we have Charlie if things were bad?
Because he's Charlie.
Well, my answer to that is...
Damn, y'all.
When you're in a marriage, marriages have ebbs and flows. And some months are great, and then other months are terrible. And some years are great, and other years are terrible. And in my marriage, I thought that was just what marriage was. You have ebbs and flows. But overall, you're still following the grand plan for your family in your head. Because, you know, you go, oh, yeah, we want to have 3 kids... All of these things. So Serge and I had many ebbs and flows in our marriage. And when we had a flow, and he happened to be, what, 43 when Charlie was born, and I was 36, we were doing okay. And we were taking a vacation to the shore with Violet and Henry. And we were talking about having a third kid. And we deliberately tried to have a kid, and we did. And it was during a flow. And, you know, all throughout my marriage, I was trying to figure out, are these ebbs and flows exclusive to our marriage? Are we really bad at being married? Or does everyone experience ebbs and flows? And I eventually thought that everyone experiences them, so I shouldn't deter from the grand plan of having 3 kids, and Serge was on...
Again,
so
I got a very simple answer for this. It's very easy to ask someone that kind of question and to play an armchair quarterback in someone else's life and say, well, why did you have a third child, or blah, blah, blah. You know, the point is, we had a third child. You know, that's it. That's all. That's the end of it. We had a third beautiful,
best thing,
awesome
beautiful
baby boy.
So
and that is it.
Happy.
That's
yeah.
it. It doesn't fucking matter. Who knows why the hell we had him? Why did we have the second one or the first one? Why did we get married? Why were we born?
We
Who
felt
the
like
fuck
it.
Who knows? You don't know. You can't sit around. This is what people do all the time in this world. And I'm not just saying this about this question. I'm just saying this is a general way. And I've heard this from people within my own family and stuff. You know, why did you have, if you felt like the marriage
oh,
was
I've
ending? had or whatever.
Some really shitty moments with people saying, why did you have a baby
right,
the marriage was over, why did you have a baby?
And I think I understand
Fuck
why people say that.
You.
It's the same thing with CNN when a plane goes down. They spend all this time trying to figure out why the plane goes down. Sometimes a fucking plane just falls out of the sky. It just does. And you're not going to ever understand why it crashed into the ocean.
Thank you. That's enough said. Let's go to the next question.
Fucking hell.
Where are we? I think I've lost my place.
I got one here.
Okay.
K Dizzle wants to know, I know you guys aren't famous, but
she
you
puts that in quotes. You got to say it. Okay, I know you guys aren't famous.
Okay, famous, but you have always had a very strong internet presence. What kind of effect did that presence have on your divorce and what you felt you couldn't
share publicly?
Would one of you share something to the other's dismay? So she's asking, like, did our internet presence have any? What would you say?
Really? I think the worst thing that ever happened to our divorce was social fucking media.
I guess you. Yeah.
Hey, Dizzle. I have struggled mightily with our internet presence post divorce. It has been very difficult for me.
It's been easy for me. I just unfollowed Monica, and I never saw anything. But that's too simple. I know that.
That's too simple. Oh, did one of your friends from high school start hitting on me on Instagram? No. But one of my friends from high school started, like, flirting with you on Instagram.
I don't know if that's hitting on.
Really? Sending you shit in the mail and asking you personal questions about why our marriage failed and telling you how hot you look on Instagram?
That's not hit. People tell me that all the time. When I'm in the grocery store, people are like, drop a yam on the floor and be like, damn, that dude is hot.
Listen, K Dizzle, social media has been awful for me since divorce.
Right.
I struggle with it. I go on and off it. I think I mentioned one time all these women came out of the woodwork, including friends of mine from high school.
It is tragically painful, I would say.
Right.
Is the way, to go through a divorce with social media in this day and age. Like, there was a time when, you know, it wasn't there. It wasn't a factor. It is a major factor nowadays.
So there's not even that social media aspect, but also, like, you were writing some stuff in the first year of the divorce that I just, it wasn't great for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was some posts about, like, why guys in bands make great lovers.
Mm-hmm.
30 things I'm looking for in my next girlfriend. There were a lot of them that I was like, what the fuck, dude?
It's just content, you know what I mean? That's not writing. It's content. Pay the bills.
Right. It's not great. It's not been great. I still struggle with it even now. We tried to set up some boundaries, Serge and I, where, you know, we blocked each other and unfollowed because that was just easier. But the internet is a very weird place. There have been women who have been my friends for many years on social media who I later discover are going hardcore after Serge. And just so you ladies know, we communicate pretty good about all that stuff. So if you were hitting on Serge and still trying to be my friend, we talked about it. And you know who you are.
It's a slippery slope.
Do I sound mad?
You sound on fire, but, you know, you have every right to be. I mean, everybody has to, and I think people go that route don't give a damn what you think. You know what I mean?
Like, so my point is, when you interact with someone on social media, you start to think they're your friend, or they invite you to have a play date with their kid, and then suddenly you find out some other shit, and you're like, well, what the fuck?
Right. I feel like it's nice. Here's what I think. It's nice to be on social media when you're not single. I'm finding, like, I can enjoy it more. Like, it's not a thing where I have to communicate with anyone else,
right.
You know? When we were married, we didn't really have a social media problem when we were married, you know? I feel like there's an element of that where it becomes this whole other, maybe even unconsciously, but a whole other force in your life. And so when you and I were both, you know, fairly single, and it's easy to utilize it again. Like, we had some sort of, as she describes, a presence, and so people do come at you, you know, most of the time, I think, genuinely interested in you or whatever, but then there's always some creepers or whatever. It was weird. It was always weird.
I guess for me,
let's not talk about it forever. I mean, like, we got to go on. We got to move on, but.
All right.
We could probably do a whole episode.
Let's do this one from Sarah. Sarah says, when do you introduce the kids? This is in regards to, I guess, new relationships.
Mm-hmm.
When do you introduce the kids? How do you explain the new relationship? It's all such a clusterfuck. And then if they have kids, how do you handle that? Can the new person discipline the kids? It's also confusing.
Mm.
I think we've done a really good job at this. I think you and I have each seen maybe a handful of people since the divorce, and you have, neither of us have introduced the kids to anyone except for the people that we currently are hanging out with.
Right. I don't think you can be too careful about that.
No,
you
know, like I've had, no.
If you introduce your kids to someone that you're just,
it's a big deal.
Seeing, you know, here and there, and you're seeing other people. I don't know where your head's at. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't want my kids knowing, and unless someone is very, very important to me, and I think they're going to be around. And even then, I don't think either of us have introduced people in the vein of girlfriend or boyfriend. It's sort of been like Arlie has kids, so our kids and Arlie's kids play, and I don't think our kids are even clocking who you and Arlie are to each other yet. At some point, we should have a conversation about that.
Yeah, I think they are. I think they get it, but I haven't sat down and said, hey, this is the situation.
You think they get it? What does that even mean?
I think they get that she's someone in my life and that they certainly get that there's no one else like that. There's not another person who I show up and we play
with.
Well,
are you like holding hands in front of them?
No, well, not at all.
That's what I'm saying.
No,
they don't perceive. What I'm trying to relay is that they're not perceiving her as a girlfriend. You're not sitting on the couch with your arm around her yet.
Right.
That will come, but I think that you and I need to have a conversation with them. Saying
Arlie doesn't like to be touched. That's the one thing. She's just constantly like, don't touch me. And she pushes me away.
No, but I think Serge and I had an agreement that, and every co-parent should have this agreement, that if you're going to introduce the kids to someone you're seeing, you should let your spouse know out of A, respect, because you want to be cool, but B, I talk about Arlie to my kids. I don't want, my kids are very sensitive.
Kids are incredibly impressionable.
And so,
you cannot mess with that.
Right. And so what I'm saying is that my son Henry has the softest heart and he's clocking who's this new woman that dad is hanging out with and how does mom feel about that? So I go out of my way to be like, oh, what did Arlie say?
Right.
How's Arlie doing? You know what? I really
That's
like Arlie's
awesome.
Hair color.
Right.
So they know that mom's on board and cool with it. And so the kids are feeling no weirdness or
guilt. And that's magnificent.
Or
I mean,
strangeness.
That sort of level of class and grace that you achieve when you act that way is, again, it has no price. It's like it's priceless.
I don't ever want my kids to feel weird. Like I'm like, who's dad seeing?
Right.
What's dad doing? I want to be like, yeah.
And I go even beyond that, like to say, God forbid, you know, if for some reason, this is the first and only time this has ever happened aside from you. You know what I'm saying? Like they've never been around anyone else.
No.
And it took me a long time and it took Arlie a long time to get to the point where we felt like, okay, this is where we're at. And if, God forbid, it didn't work out or something, it would take me another year or two or three.
You'd even be more gun-shy because you're like,
there
shit.
There would never, like even the next person, if there was another person, I'm just using an example, but like I would be so hesitant because I would need to know that their brains are completely okay.
Right.
And maybe that's overthinking it, but
no.
I don't think you can overthink it.
You can't overthink it with kids. Yeah. Nope. Very
next
carefully.
Let's roll.
Yeah. Where are we? I don't even know where
okay,
we are.
Here's one. Says, how did the littlest come up? Oh, we already.
That was the Charlie thing.
All right.
Yeah.
Makeup sex.
Makeup sex.
It was all makeup sex after the
first night.
Oh, here's
one from Katie. I like Katie. Did you, Serge, talk to your girlfriend? Well, she listens to the podcast, but did you, Serge, talk to your girlfriend about how it's important to you and Monica that holidays and kids' birthdays are spent as a family? Was she totally okay with that? What if she hadn't been or won't be in the future? How will both of you balance the kids' needs with those of your new partner?
That's great questions. Yes, we did speak about that, of course. And again, I think she's totally cool about it.
She is, though? Like, my question is, and I don't mean this to, sometimes I think that maybe she feels pressure to say to you she's totally cool about it, but are you really listening to how she's feeling?
Do I think that she, as well as I, would have been into the idea of being able to hang out sometime, maybe between Christmas Eve and Christmas? Of course. Who wouldn't be? But at the same time, do I feel like, given the circumstances, given the fact that she's very close with her family, that I'm close with my family, that I want to be with you and the kids, that there's no way that our young children
right.
should be not experiencing
right.
the Christmas Eve and the Christmas morning and the Christmas day that we envision for them,
right?
Right?
Yeah.
At this point in juncture in time, it's a no-brainer. And I think she feels the same way.
All right.
You know, we're all on the same page there. And as far as the future,
yeah.
well, who knows? This is, again, we kind of referred to this
It's something that you have to you just have to get to the next Christmas and
exactly.
consider your circumstances
exactly.
and talk to everyone and go, well, this is the thing that makes...
But even looking ahead at next Christmas...
I'm having a sentence here.
I'm sorry. I had so much coffee.
Oh, you're all wired, dude. Each Christmas that comes, you get to the Christmas and you say, okay, here's where we all are. Here's everyone's circumstances. Here's what makes the most sense this year.
Right.
And it's not a hard and fast rule. Maybe next year you and Arlie are sipping hot cocoa on Christmas Eve. I don't fucking know.
Fuck you.
But maybe we're all sipping hot cocoa together.
Arms entwined like a pretzel, like she's drinking out of my cup and I'm
maybe,
drinking.
Maybe we're, I shouldn't say that. That never mind. That would have taken
Yeah, never mind what you're going to say. You're crazy. But
anyway, yes, we're very communicative about those kinds of things. I would like to continue to be very communicative about holidays. But I also don't want, there's a part of me that doesn't want Arlie to feel... Like I said, it's not all about our scenario and our kids.
Mm-hmm.
Her who she is and how she feels and what the deal is with her kids and however her situation is with their dad, it's all of equal import to us
right.
and me
right.
so that everybody feels happy and nobody's... Because if Arlie is feeling slighted somehow, like Serge is always going to spend the holidays with his ex-wife, that's shitty. And
right.
that's going to engender ill will. Even if nobody wants it to, you can't help but feel a certain way.
Sometimes I feel like I'm really good at communicating, and then other times I feel like I'm terrible at it. And so it's always on my mind.
Well,
and therefore, I think that's good, because I do feel like if a certain amount of time goes by where, say, she and I haven't talked about things, then I need to sort of say, okay, what else is on your mind? What are we
need
to discuss?
Well, I think she's a very kind person, and I worry that she errs... This is what I was saying to you, is I would worry that she errs on the side of being kind to the detriment of her own true feelings of, I want to be with my boyfriend or whatever.
No, she ain't that kind. I'll tell you that right now.
She's not that kind?
No, hell no. Hell no.
Anyway.
No, she is very much so. And perhaps you're right. I don't know. And again, it's hard to say that. I also feel like we have a pretty honest discourse about everything that goes on. It's hard. A lot of this is like, this isn't like normal life. A divorced... relationships in the wake of divorce, it's like a jungle, you know? It ain't like walking down the fucking street. It's like you're walking through the jungle and there's vines and wild animals and
right.
bugs the size of a freaking waffle iron, and you got to figure it out.
Right. Well, I worry sometimes, like, you and I make certain agreements or whatever, and then I worry sometimes that you're not the greatest communicator, that you're relaying something to her that's coming from us that doesn't exist because you got it all wrong from me.
No, yeah, it's possible.
So,
I don't think so. Overall, I don't think so. I know that concerns you in some aspects. But, and again, are some things lost in translation? Sure. I'm sure
right.
it goes down with you and your life, too. You know, there's
right.
there's got to be things.
Well, which is, again, a part of our email exchange was we should all get together and have a beer, because the more we're together... And communicate and feel like we're all cool.
Non-alcoholic beer.
The better. That's not fun. The better that kind of stuff will go down. All right, what are we missing? What do we got?
Okay.
Here. Jody asked, why do we keep doing creative endeavors together? What's the wording of it? I can't find it.
What inspires you to continue to take on creative projects together?
What's your answer to that?
I don't know. We haven't really done many else.
What are you talking
this,
about? We just spent a whole year writing a book proposal.
That's true.
And now we're doing a podcast. And before that, we wrote several columns together on the internet.
All right. I guess I had tried to block all that. I think a lot of times in this world, you know, you end up doing what you know. You know, so I feel like really fulfilled. With the band I have with my brother, I get to do something that not a lot of people get to do and play rock and roll. This is also a huge part of my life, because it's very much been my life since, you know, for the past How long have we known each other?
Me and you?
Yeah.
2004.
Okay, so that's like 13 years. So because we were both pretty creative from the get-go, and because you started to write a blog, and it almost became like a no-brainer that we would, you know, we both had our separate things that we did writing-wise and whatnot, but combining forces, it isn't easy, you know, it's not always easy, but I feel like we did find a really cool balance.
I enjoy working with you. You're sort of a pain in the ass sometimes, but you're one of the smartest people I know. And your take on the world and society and books and literature inspires me, and I'm always interested in what you have to say, and I always want to know what books I should read, and you just sort of inspire me in that regard. You write things that blow my mind regularly, and so I had been telling Serge for a year that I wanted to do a podcast because I like to edit things, and I've been a journalist for 20 years, and I like to write news packages and tell stories with video and audio and pictures, and I became a podcast junkie, and the first person I thought of was Serge because of the way he writes and the way his brain thinks, and he's sort of like that creative thing, and I like to piece it all together in this way, and so it just keeps happening that, you know, we get contacted by people that are interested in us together. Mm. We got contacted by an agent who wanted us to write a book proposal about divorce and co-parenting, so we spent a lot of time working on that. So it just kind of keeps happening, and we like that. We like being artistic, and it works out that we do it together. Serge is my favorite person to do stuff like this with, because that's part of what drew me to him in the very beginning, was his artistic nature and his musicianship and his writing, and he's one of the most lyrical.
Mm-hmm. Keep going.
he's one of the going. Most lyrical literary people I know, and I like that.
Someone wants another Christmas gift.
Anyway, we've rambled on a long time.
I don't know if we got up to all the questions.
I think we did.
Thank you very much. If we didn't get to your question, maybe we'll do this again.
Yeah, maybe every couple months we can do a little question thing.
Maybe the podcast should just become we just read answers off of them.
It would be a lot easier.
Anyway, we want to wish you and your family a happy new year. I hope 2018, I hope you wake up on New Year's Day and walk outside and find $10 on the ground. And I hope you don't get hit by
all right.
Falling
what the hell are you even talking about right now?
I don't know. I'm just wishing people the best.
Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Our Ex-Life, featuring music from Serge's band, Marah. You can find them at marah-usa.com.
Our podcast is produced, edited, and magically created from the ground up by Monica Blanco.
We want to hear from you. You can find us all over the internet. We're at ourxlife.com. We're at ourxlife on Facebook, on Instagram. Shoot us a question. Send us an email. We love hearing from you. We read all of your emails. We read everything. And it's what makes this whole thing worth it. So thank you.